Masechet Bava Kama Daf Sadi He. According to Mishnah that said, Gazal Param Ubedet V'Yalda. If a robber steals a cow that was pregnant, and while it's in his possession, it gives birth. Or he stole a lamb that was full of wool, and then he sheared it while it was in his possession. The Mishnah taught that he has to pay back the value of the pregnant cow, which is worth more than a non-pregnant cow. And he has to pay back the value of that lamb when it was full of wool, which is more than the value of the lamb currently when it has no wool. Now we're going to see a three-way machloket on precisely the payment here, how and what he has to pay. Tenor banan hagozel rachel ugzazah para v'yalda mishelem otah v'et gizoteh v'et v'ladoteha tibrer b'meir. Rabbi Yehuda omer gezela chozeret b'aineha. Rabbi Shimon omer ro'in otah ki'ilu hi shuma eslo b'chesef. The first opinion of Rabbi Meir is that if he steals this sheep and then the robber himself shears it or a pregnant cow and it gives birth, he has to pay the meaning the cow or sheep itself and the wool and the offspring. In other words, he has to give it back as is. He has to give back the original items. I mean, it gave birth. So he has to give back the mother and the offspring or the animal and its shearings. So according to this, it'd be made, it seems like he thinks that a change, and this is a pretty fundamental change, does not make an acquisition. Even though the robber changed the item, still it belongs to the item belongs to the original owner, and he has to return the items in their current state. Rabbi Yehuda omer gezela chozeret be'aineha. Rabbi Yehuda says only the stolen item you have to return as is, meaning the cow you have to return, but the offspring underwent a total change, and so the robber can keep the offspring. He still has to pay for it, right? I mean, everyone agrees that he's going to have to pay the amount of the value of what he stole. But in terms of the item itself, so Rabbi Yehuda says the item itself, or the lamb, he has to return the lamb. He can keep the wool and pay for the wool. So that's an in-between position. Rabbi Shimon says, we evaluate the entire thing of how much this animal was worth at the time of the theft. And we appraise it at the time of the robbery. How much is a pregnant cow? Pay that. But the robber can keep the whole thing. So you see, according to the Bishimon, the whole thing went through a change. The mother and the offspring, the lamb and the wool, and so the robber can keep the whole thing and can pay. Generally, the Bishimon would be the best for the robber, even though it's all the same value in terms of monetary value, but the robber would prefer to keep the item, usually. That's why he stole it in the first place, because he wants it. According to the Bishimon, he gets to keep the item and pay. Biyuda says he keeps only the mother or the animal, has to return the mother or the animal. He only gets to keep the new thing, the offspring or the wool. And Rabbi Meir thinks that he has to return return everything as is. So now we have a question about Rabbi. We're going to come back to Biyuda and Bishimon on the other side of the Amud and explain their positions. But now, Rabbi Meir. Ibai Elihu. My Tamed, Rabbi Meir. What is the reasoning of Rabbi Meir? Mishum de kasaba shinui bim komo omed. Odima ba'alma shinui konev hacha kenasa hu de kanis. Is Rabbi Meir's reasoning because he thinks that even though undergoes a physical change, nevertheless, it remains the same ownership of the original owner. And just because now it's sheared or now it gave birth makes no difference. The whole thing belongs to the original owner. He has to return it as is. Is that his position? Or does it be made to think that in general, a physical change does also change the ownership now? And really, from the letter of the law, the robber should be able to keep the items. However, the rabbis want to impose a penalty. They don't want him to be able to benefit. You stole, and now you get to keep this nice pregnant cow, and then now it gave birth, and you get to keep the offspring and the cow and the lamb and the fleece. That's not right that you should have this benefit. So the rabbis come and say, you know what? We're going to force you to return all the items as is, so that you have no benefit from what you stole. Okay, that's the question. Lema nafka mina, what would be a practical consequence between the two? If he steals an item, an animal, and it gets weaker and skinnier. So, if you say that physical change is not legally significant and there remains the property of the owner, then if the robber stole a cow that was $1,000, and now it got weaker and now it's only worth $800, so the robber nevertheless has to give back the animal as is, because even though it's worth less now, but still the owner owns the cow in and of itself, and so he returns the thing as it is in its current state, even though it's worth less, and so the owner is getting less than what was robbed from him. However, if you say that in general he thinks that a physical change does make an acquisition, then when the animal gets weaker and goes from 1,000 to 800, that weakness, that's becoming skinny, as a fundamental change, and now that a significant change, so now the robber owns it. If the robber owns the animal itself, he has to pay the $1,000 what he stole. He has to pay the value at the time of the stealing. And so he would have to pay $1,000 here. The knas would not apply in this case, because the knas is only supposed to make it worse for him. And so here, the fact that it became his is actually worse for him. So that's a case where there would be a practical difference. All right, that's the question, and we're going to attempt to answer it from a few different sources. The first is an upcoming Mishnah. Tashema, Gazal behema v'hizkin ha'abadim v'hizkinu mishalem kishat ha'gezela. Rabbi Meir omer, v'abadim omer lo hareshel chalefanecha, v'ilu behema kishat ha'gezela. So the Mishnah, that has a case that's similar to the Nafkamina that we just mentioned of it becoming weaker. Here he steals an animal, and then now it got old while in the possession of the robber, or he steals slaves and they became old and weaker and now worth less than they were at the time of the robbery. According to Tanakama, he has to pay according to the value at the time of the robbery. In other words, according to Tanakama, the physical change of getting older is a fundamental change, and now there's the robber owns the animal and the slave, and has to therefore pay the original amount. The Bimir, however, makes a difference between slaves and an animal. For a slave, there he can say, here, take your slave, I stole your slave, but it remains the same ownership, and he can return the slave even though it's worth less now. Whereas with an animal, there he agrees with Tanakama and says that he can return it. He has to pay at the time the higher value, the value at the time when he stole it, when it was younger. So let's analyze. If Rabbi Meir thinks in general that a physical change does not make a change in ownership, but it still remains the original owner's animal, then even for this case, an animal that got old, he should be able to say, well, here's the animal, it's still yours, so I return it, even though it's worth less now. But he doesn't say that. Rather, must be the Meir thinks in general that a physical change does make an acquisition, and now the owner, now the robber owns the item, and he can, and that's why he has to return, he has to pay the higher amount. In the case of our Mishnah, the case above, where the animal gave birth or you sheared it, there the Bimeir says you have to give back the actual items intact, because that was a special penalty. Okay, so this seems to be a good proof. However, we reject it. Amri, Rabbi Meir lidivrehem de Rabbanan kama lehu, lididi shinui en kone afilu behema name. Rabbi Meir was only speaking on behalf of, in accordance with the rabbi's opinion. And he says as follows, according to my own opinion, it could be Rabbi Meir really thinks that physical change does not change the ownership, and even in the case of an animal, does not change the ownership, and therefore the owner keeps it. And according to Bimeir, really, he could return the slave, weakened and older as now, and he could also return the animal in its older and cheaper state. And when Rabbi Meir was speaking in the Mishnah, he was only saying Ela Liditchu, Damiditu Shinui Koneh, according to your opinion that you think a physical change does make a change in ownership, and the robber owns it. Or do li mihat b'abdad de kemekarka edame v'karka ena nigzelet. At least you should agree with me regarding the slave that a slave is similar. We see in general that a slave has many similarities in law to land, and land cannot be stolen. I mean, you know, you can go and you can't move the land to take it. You can go and squat on someone's land and try to claim ownership, but land cannot be stolen in the sense that you actually become the owner by changing something. And so too with a slave, even though it changes and becomes older and weaker, nevertheless, a slave always remains. You should agree with me regarding the slave that it remains the property of the owner, and you should be able to return the slave, right? So even according to you, and that the shinui koneh, and therefore he is not going to return, doesn't return the animal, because now the robber owns the animal and he pays for it, still you should agree with me regarding the slave. Family Rabbanan lo abdak metatel edameh, and the rabbis would say back to the Bimei Eir, no, we think that slaves are like movable property, and that's why, just like movable property, if it undergoes a change, now it's a new owner, and that's why, for both animals and slaves, according to Tanakama, once it becomes older, then the robber owns it, and he has to then pay the higher amount of the time, the value at the time that was stolen. Okay, so now we have no proof, and so we're going to try again to figure out, according to Bimei Eir, what does he think? Tanash Tashema. Lisboa lo Adom uspao Shachor. Shachor uspao Edo Adom. Rabbi Meir omer noten lo deme samro. Deme samro in. Deme samro vishib ho la. Let's say someone owns some wool, and he gives it to the dyer, the professional dyer, and says, can you please dye it red for me? And instead, he dyes it black, or he asks him to dye it black, and he dyes it red. So the Rabbi Meir says, the dyer is kind of like a thief here, even though he probably did it by mistake and whatever, but still, he took this person's item and turned it into something that the owner didn't want. So the dyer is responsible to return something. What does he have to return? Rabbi Meir says, he only has to return the value of the wool itself. Let's say the wool itself, raw, is worth $100. Now, if you dye it, even if you dye it the wrong color that the owner doesn't want, still it's worth more, because someone, even if the owner wanted it to be black and he dyed it red, someone will pay $130 for such wool that's dyed red. So to be me, it says he only has to pay the original wool, right? So we infer from that only the $100, but the extra $30 he does not have to pay. Now we can infer from this. If Rabbi Meir thinks that a physical change, and this is certainly a physical change, dyeing something, although we did discuss in the past, can you take soap and take it out, whatever. We're assuming that this is a physical change. And so if he thinks that a physical change does not make a new owner, and it remains the property of the original owner, then he should have to give it back as is. And that would mean giving back now this thing that is dyed, could be the wrong color, but still it's worth more than it was before. But Rabbi Meir doesn't say that. He says he can just pay the original value of the item. So it must be, he thinks that a physical change does acquire the item for the robber. And that's why he can keep the newly dyed item and only pay what the value was when he stole it, which was the raw wool. And in the case of our Mishnah, of the cow that gave birth, or that you sheared it, he has to give back the original items only as a fine. So that's a good proof, and we accept that proof. But now we go back and change the question. Ika de amre ha la ibaya lan de me pich ravetane gazal para viskina avadim viskinu mishalim kishata gezela dibrer bi meir hachamim omrim bavadim amai lo hare shel chadafanecha vadai lerbi meir shinui konev hacha kenasa hu deka kanis. So we just concluded that according to Rabbi Meir, shinui kone, and now we're saying that that was not never the question all along, because Rav has a different version of the Mishnah that we quoted, the Mishnah that's upcoming. And in this version, it's coming up, we're going to see on the next daf is where it actually appears, but we already quoted it, but the Rav switches around the opinions. And in the Rav's version, Rabbi Meir is the one that thinks that if he stole a cow and it got older, or slaves and they got older, he has to pay according to the time of the robbery. That means that now that they got older, that's a physical change, and then that he acquires it thereby, because shinui kone. And that's why he has to pay the higher amount, which was the value at the time of the robbery. In this version, it's chachamim that make a difference between avadim, that he can give it back as is, and animals. So in this version, certainly Rabbi Meir must think shiur kone, and in the case of our Mishnah, the cow that gave birth, or the shearing, the lamb that was sheared, surely Rabbi Meir thinks that really he should be able to keep it because it undergoes a fundamental change. The robber should keep it. But the rabbis then made a penalty and said you have to give back the original items as they are. Okay, so now this is not a question anymore, but what is the question? Ki kai ba'yalan, hachi ba'yalan. If there was a question, it was as follows: Ki ka kanis b'mezid, aval b'shogeg la kanis odilma, afilu b'shogeg nami kanis. When the rabbis made this fine and said that even though technically the robber, you own the item, but we're going to make you give it back, do they make that fine only if he robs intentionally? He knew that he was taking something that doesn't belong to him. But if he robs unintentionally, you can rob unintentionally. You take something, you thought it was yours. Oh, it turns out it wasn't yours. Then there's no reason to make a penalty against someone who wasn't intending to steal, or maybe there's no difference. And even if he steals unintentionally, still the rabbis make this penalty and he has to give back the original items. So that's the question that we asked. And now we're going to try to answer that one. Tashema, hamisha gobin min ha-mehorarin. There's a braita that says there's five different types of monetary claims that you can collect only from freed property, meaning property that the defendant currently has, and not property that he sold that the claimant may have a lien on. So in general, like if it's a oral loan, then you can only collect from property that the borrower currently has. If it's written in a document and the document says, right, and all of your property is lien to this, then the lender can go and take from the sold property of the borrower, right, if he sold it after the lien took effect. So that's the general. So now we're going to see five things where you can only collect from free property that is currently under the hand of the payer. Ve'elu hen perot ve'shevach perot ve'mekabel alav lazun ben ishto ubat ishto ve'get chob she'en ba achariyut v'chtubat isha she'en ba achariyut. The first case is perot. Let's say a robber steals land and enjoys the produce while it's under his possession, right? And he takes $100 worth of apples, and eventually he's caught and he returns the land. And so now the owner of the land comes and says, hey, you took all that $100 worth of apples, you have to pay me. He has a right to go and take the assets of the robber, but only assets he currently has, not assets that he had sold in the meantime. And also shevach perot. This is a case where the robber steals a piece of land. The robber sells it to a buyer who either knowingly or unknowingly buys it, that is stolen property. And then that buyer adds value to the land. He adds a fence, he adds fertilizer, he makes it better. He puts investment of $100 into the land. And then eventually he's caught. The robber is caught and the original owner comes and gets the land back. Now the buyer has a right to go to the robber and he can collect whatever he bought it for. He paid $1,000, they'll say. So he can go and collect from the robber, and for that he can take even from lien property. But the shevach perot, the other $100 of investment that he put into the property, he also has a right to collect that from the robber, but only from the robber's free assets, not from something he sold. There's no lien for that shevach perot. The third case, if a husband agrees to pay sustenance to his wife's sons or daughters. She has from a different marriage. Legally, the new husband doesn't have to sustain them, but he agreed to in the ketubah so that the wife can collect from the husband. Says, "Oh, you have to pay a sandwich for my son today." So she can collect from free assets, but not from leaned assets. Even though ketubah generally is paid even from leaned assets, but not for this. Get hov shen bo achrayut. Let's say you have a document of a promissory note, but it doesn't say in it that all land will be leaned in order to pay the loan. So even though it is written, even though it's a written document, but it doesn't say that there's a lien, then you can't collect from lien property, sold property. And also a ketubah. Ketubah generally assumes that the wife can collect the payment for the ketubah even from property that the husband sells. There's a lien on it, but if it doesn't say that there is a lien or says that there's no lien, then since there's no property guarantee in the document, so she cannot collect from it. In our ketubah today, they all say and that she can collect even from right land that he has or that he will have, that he sells, that she has a lien on his property. But if it doesn't say it, then she can only collect from available property that he has. Okay, so that's the Baraita. Now, man shemat le damar achariut lav ta'ut sofer hu rabbi meir vekatani perot veshevach perot. We're going to try to figure out who is the author of this Baraita. Well, who thinks that the guarantee in a loan document, if it's missing, we don't consider it an error. There's machloket about this. If you have a loan document, a promissory note, usually it says, and you have a lien on to collect all the from the property of the borrower. But let's say that's missing in the document. One opinion, the opinion of the rabbis, is it must be that the scribe just forgot to put it in. But we assume that anyone who makes a loan with the written document is going to have a lien. And so he can collect the property, even if it doesn't say so in the document. That's the rabbis. But Rabbi Meir is the one that says, no, if it's not there in the document, then we don't assume it and he cannot collect. So this Baraita that says you cannot collect if it doesn't say so in the document, it must be that this Baraita is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Now that we established that, look how it says Perot and Shevach Perot. So what is the case of Shevach Perot? Shevach Perot Chechidame. Kegon shegazal sadeh mechavero mechara leacher vishbicha. Vareh hi osa mitachat yado kishuhu gobe. It's a case where a robber steals some land and he sells it to someone else, and that buyer puts in investment. He buys it for $1,000 and he puts $100 of investment into it. And then the original owner takes it back. So then the buyer can go to the to the robber, and when he collects, as we explained before, the buyer can collect the principal amount, $1,000, even from lien property that had been sold of the robber, but the extra $100 that he put into it, he can only collect from free available assets of the robber. Why does that buyer have a right to take both of these things from the robber? Well, it's because the original owner came and took the land and the enhanced value of the land that's embedded in the land, right? The owner took everything from the buyer, so the buyer has recourse to collect both of those things from the robber, although for one he can collect from lien, and for the other he can only collect from the free property. Now, here's the proof. Are we not talking about where the buyer is an ignoramus and he doesn't know whether the law is that land can be stolen or cannot be stolen? The point is that, first of all, he may not know whether this is stolen land or not, so he takes it unintentionally. And even if it is stolen, he may think that land, once it's stolen, now belongs to the robber, right? The robber has to pay money, but this land is legitimately under the ownership of the robber, and therefore the robber can legitimately sell it to the buyer. So the buyer thinks wrongly that this is really his land, and so he's stealing it. See, the buyer is taking land that's not his, so he is himself a thief. But he's an unintentional thief because he thinks that the robber, even if he stole it, is able to acquire it. Nevertheless, even though that buyer is an unintentional robber, nevertheless, the original owner can come and take back not only the original value of the land, but even the increased value of the land. So we can see from here, Ushma Mina, Bishogeg, Nami Kanis. This is all the opinion of Bimeir, because we already proved that this Baraita is the opinion of Bimeir, and this is an unintentional thief, and nevertheless, he has to give back the land as is, even including the increased value of it. This is similar to the cow that gave birth, right? And he has to give back the whole thing, and he does not acquire, we don't say he acquires it, even though he changed it, but he has to give everything back as a penalty. So is this not a good proof? We say no. Amri lo belokach tamid hacham v'yada. We're talking about where the buyer was knowledgeable. He knew it was stolen property. He knew that there's no way the robber can legitimately acquire it, and so he is buying stolen property that now still belongs to the original owner, and nevertheless, he goes ahead and takes it. So that's why he is a purposeful, intentional thief, and that's why it makes sense that he should be penalized. So we can't prove anything from here about the case of an unintentional robber. So lastly, Tashema, lispo lo adom uspo shachor, shachor uspo adom, ribi meiro meno ten lo deme samro in, deme samro vishi, back to this case of also an upcoming Mishnah. If someone has some wool that's worth 100 and he gives it to a dyer and he tells him to make it red, but he ends up making it black, or he tells him to make it black and ends up making it red. We're assuming that he's doing this unintentionally, right? Why would he purposely make it the wrong color? And so this dyer is like an unintentional robber. The Bimeir says he has to pay back only the $100, the original value. So only the original value, but not the added value that he put by putting the dye in, even if it's the wrong color, still it's worth more. And if you think that even an unintentional robber like this guy is, the rabbis also give him a penalty, then in this case, the dyer should have to pay back the full amount, the 100 plus the $30. Rather, we can conclude that the rabbis, according to the Bimeir, only make this penalty if purposeful robber. This is you stole on purpose, even if it underwent a change, go return that item. You should not get benefit from it. But if he stole it only by mistake, then they did not make such a penalty, and that is a good conclusion. The Gemara next explains the other two opinions in the Braita. Rabbi Yehuda omer gezela chozeret be'ayneha. If he stole a pregnant cow, then he gives birth, and under the possession of the robber, so he has to pay back the cow as is, but he can keep the offspring and only pay for the offspring. Was it Pinavid Biuda? Rabbi Shimon omer ino taki ilu hi shuma eslo bechesef. My benayhu. Rabbi Shimon thinks that the robber keeps everything for himself, and he only pays the estimation of the amount of the time of the robbery. Now, what would be the difference between them? What would be a practical difference between them? I ben Ahmad of Zavid. B'shevach shal gabe gezela kamipalge. Rabbi Yehuda sabad de nigzal have, Rabbi Shimon sabad de gazdan have. Let's say you had an improvement of an item and is still attached to the stolen item. For example, he steals a sheep without fleece, and then while the robber has it, it grows. According to the Biuda, that would belong to the nigzal, to the original owner. And so he would have to return that extra item as is, which is what he says here. The gezela chozeret be'aneha, what he stole is given back as is, but in this case, since it's attached to it, he would have to give back also the growth as is. Whereas v'Rabbi Shimon sabad de gazlan haveh, it says, even though it's attached, it belongs to the robber. And that's why the robber keeps the original thing and the thing that grows, and he only has to give the payment for it. That is Rav Zevi's interpretation. But there's another interpretation of Rav Papa Amar Dekula Amar Shevach Shal Gabe Gezela De Gezlan Have. According to Rav Papa, everybody agrees that the robber keeps the increased enhancement that's attached to the animal, like that it grows. The disagreement is about how much of that extra growth does the robber keep. According to the Biuda, the robber keeps all of it, of the actual item, and he has to simply pay for it. Whereas according to the Bishimon, the robber keeps either half or a third or a quarter, and then has to return the rest of it. The reason is because we view the robber kind of like a shepherd or rancher that works for the owner, and he is taking care of the animal in the meantime, so he gets to keep a portion of it, and according to the local custom, it might be a half or a third or a quarter, so he gets what the usual custom would be. Tenan, Gazal para vinit abera eslo v'yalda, Rachel vinit ana eslo ugzazah, Mishalim kisha tegezela, yalda in lo yalda hadra be'ayna. We're going to try to prove Rav Zevi's opinion against Rav Papa from our very Mishnah, the clause that says if a robber stoles a cow and it gets pregnant while it is, so when he stole it, it was not pregnant. It got pregnant while it was in the possession of the robber and it gave birth. Or he stole a plain sheep that had nothing and then it grew wool and he cut it all under the robber's own possession. In that case, the robber has to pay only the original amount at the time that he stole it. So we can infer from the Mishnah that only Yaldai, if it gave birth, then that's when he has to pay only the original amount. But let's say it didn't give birth, but it did become pregnant. So right now it's pregnant, then he would have to return the item as is. Okay, with that assumption, Bishlama Rav Zvi de Amar, Shevach Shal Gabe Gezela de Nigzal Have. According to Rav Zavid, he said that according to the Biuda, the increased enhancement that's still attached, and being pregnant is such an example of an enhancement that's still attached, it belongs to the Nigzal, to the original owner. So then this Mishnah would be the opinion of the Biuda that the original owner still owns the animal because the enhancement is still attached, and therefore, since it's still pregnant, he has to return the pregnant animal, which is not true if it gives birth, because then it's not attached anymore. So then we have an author for this Mishnah. Ela Rav Papa d'amar de gazlanave hamane lo Rabbi Yehuda velo Rabbi Shimon. But according to Rav Papa's interpretation, he said that everyone agrees that it belongs to the gazlan. And the question is only how much does the gazlan keep all of it or only part of it? Well, neither of these opinions would explain the Mishnah that says that he has to give back the pregnant cow to the original owner. So who would be the author? Amar l'chav papa hu adin afilu lo yalda na mekishat gezelahu de mishalem v'adikatani yalda aide de nisib resha yalda nisib sefa na me yalda. The papa says, I'm going to argue with your derivation from the Mishnah that the robber only keeps the enhancement and pays the original amount at the time that he stole it only if it gave birth. But you inferred that if it didn't give birth, still pregnant, then he has to give it back. Not true, Rav Papa says. I think that he gets to keep the enhancement no matter what. So in that case, why did the Mishnah mention the case of giving birth, that was just as parallelism from the Resha, where it was mentioned a case where the animal gave birth. So it also talk about here, listen, if the animal gives birth, but the same would be true if the animal didn't give birth. Either way, the robber can keep that enhancement. And so Rav Papa can explain this Mishnah as well, according to his own opinion. Now that we defended Rav Papa, we even have a proof on his behalf. Tanya kivated Rav Papa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rino takilu hi shuma etzlo bechesef lemechsa l'shalish ulrabiya. According to Rabbi Shimon, we make an estimation so that we can give the robber a portion, a half, a third, or a quarter of the enhancement according to the local custom of what a hired shepherd would get, the robber gets as well. Amar Rav Ashi, ki avinan be Rav Kahana iba ayalan, the Rabbi Shimon damar lemechsel shel Rabbi Yehuda Shakil gazlan, ki misalkinan le b'demed, misalkinan le od yoma mebisra shakul. Rav Ashi asks, when we were in the house of Rav Kahana, the question came up. According to the Bishimon, who says that the robber gets a half, a third, or a quarter, when we go and take it from him, we remove the stolen item from him, and then we pay him for a portion of what he deserves for taking care of it. How do we pay that? Do we pay that with money, with cash, or can he take a portion of the item itself from the meat of the animal? So it is in. Is it in cash or it is in? Is it in kind? Ufashatna mehada marav Nachman amar Shmuel, and we answered it from the following statement of Rav Nachman name of Shmuel, who says Shelosha shamin lahen hashevach malin otan bedamim. There are three cases where we make an appraisal of something that increases in value, and one pays with money. We see that these are three cases, assuming that there are only these three cases. Our case is not mentioned here, which means in our case, it would not be so. That's at least the interpretation of Rabbeinu Chananel, that he can be paid from the meat itself. Okay, but now we have to explain these three cases where we pay a person only with the money. Ve'elohen bechor la pashut, a firstborn son to a non-firstborn son, the payment that he gives. The cases where a father dies, leaving some property, and it's not divided. And while it's not divided, still in the estate, they put in money and it enhances. They enhance it and make it worth more. Now, the law is that the firstborn gets double only of the original amount that they inherited. But any enhancement that's made afterwards, the firstborn does not get double of that. Therefore, when they do come to divide it, so the original amount of the land, the firstborn gets double. But the enhancement part, the firstborn has to pay the non-firstborn for that. When he pays, he has to pay cash, he doesn't have to pay in land. Second case is Baal Chov La Lokech, or Baal Chov La Yetomim, a creditor who is collecting money from the borrower, but the borrower doesn't have it, and so the borrower had sold land that, and there was a lien on that land. When the creditor comes to that buyer, he can take the land, but let's say that buyer enhanced the land, so he collects that only from cash, not from land itself. And similarly, a creditor that is collecting from the orphans of that the father owed money, and now they're taking from the orphans. In the meantime, also, it increased in value. So the payment for the increase in value is paid by cash, and they cannot collect that from land. So it's only in these cases that one has to pay cash. But in other cases, one can collect from the thing itself, from the land, or in our case, from the meat of the animal. We next ask a question about Shmuel's statement that we just learned. Amar Ravi Nal Rav Ashi, mi amar Shmuel bal chov la lokeach yahib le shevach? Did Shmuel really say that the creditor who comes to collect money from the land that was leaned, and he goes to the buyer of the land, right? The creditor goes to the debtor has no money. So the creditor says, oh, you had land, you sold it. And so he goes to the buyer, but the buyer put in money and enhanced the field. And so Shmuel just mentioned that the creditor has to pay the buyer for that enhanced value. Is that true? V'amash Shmuel Baal Chov Gove Et HaShevach. Shmuel also said that the creditor goes and takes the land from the buyer as is with the enhancement, and he keeps all of that value. The buyer then will have to go after the debtor and say, hey, you know, you have to pay me back for the land that I bought from you and that was taken from me, and you have to pay me back also for the enhancement. Let me go get the money from the debtor. Why? That's what Shmuel says. So we have a contradiction. First, Shmuel said that the creditor has to pay the buyer, and then Shmuel said the creditor does not have to pay the buyer for the enhancement that the buyer put into the land. The first law, where the creditor has to pay the buyer back, that's talking about where the enhancement is already in the ground, and the ground already fully grew this produce, and it's already harvested, and they're carrying it on their shoulders. So because it's already fully there, so now the creditor has to pay the buyer for it. It's all realized. However, if it's just he put the enhancement in the land, but the land did not yet complete its extra growth because of that enhancement, in that case, he takes the land with the enhancement as is, and the creditor does not have to pay it back. So those are different cases. So that's a nice theoretical answer, but we see a daily incidents where Shmuel rules that even if the land grew extra and it's all finished and it's being carried on the shoulders, nevertheless, Shmuel tells the buyers that they have to give up on that enhancement, that the creditor does not pay them back. So Shmuel rules the same way in both cases. Amale la kashya ha de masik be kishiur ara ushbacha ha de la masik be ela kishiur ara. Rather, the difference between the rulings of Shmuel is how much is owed to the creditor. If the creditor is owed by the debtor an equivalent of amount of the amount of the original land plus the enhancement, in other words, the original land, let's say he bought for $1,000 and he put in another $100 for it, but that creditor is owed $1,100, so then he can take the land and the enhancement as well, because he wants to get fully paid for what he's owed, and then the buyer will have to settle that with the debtor. However, where, let's say, the creditor is only owed $1,000, so then he can take the land, but he has to pay back the buyer the $100 for the enhancement, because he doesn't need that money. That's just extra on top. So he has to pay it back. Ravinat responds that this distinction makes sense according to the view that if the buyer has money, he has cash on hand, and so here you have the creditor, he comes to the debtor and says, owe me $1,000. The debtor says, I don't have any money. There's land that you had to lean on, go collect from that. And so now the debtor comes to the buyer and says, listen, I have a lien on this land, give me the land. Now this opinion says, even if the buyer has $1,000 cash on hand, nevertheless, that buyer cannot insist on keeping the land. Rather, the creditor, because he has a lien on the land, has a right to say, I don't want your money. I have a lien on the land. I want the land. And if you follow that opinion, then the distinction we just said makes sense. Ela lemandamar iit lezuze la lokeach maseh misalek le lebal chov. If you say the other opinion, that if the buyer has money on hand, then the buyer can say to the creditor, here, take your $1,000, and he can keep the land and not hand it over to the creditor. If the buyer has a right to do that, then lemale ihavuli zuze hava mesalekin alach mikule ara hashta habli geriva de ara shiur shibhai. Then the buyer should also be able to say, listen, if I had money, then I would be able to keep all of the land. Now, even though I don't have the money, but I put enhancement into it, so at least give me a small amount of land for the value of the enhancement. In other words, since this is money that you only have a lien on the land itself, not on the enhancement that I made. That enhancement should be considered like cash value, because you should give me that amount in cash. So if I had cash, I would be able to keep the whole thing. I don't have cash, but you do owe me for the enhancement that I put on the land, which you don't have a lien on. So therefore, I should be able to keep a small portion of the land that's equal to my enhancement. So what do you say about that? Amar le hachav ma'iskinan kegon deshavya nihale apotikid. Amar le lo yehelech apiraon elamizeh. So Rav Asher says, we're talking about a case where originally when they made the loan, the debtor made this land as a designated as repayment. You'll get repaid from this land and this land only. And so therefore, the creditor has a lien on all of the land and he can take all of it. And in this case, the buyer would not be able to say, oh, if I had money, then I would be able to keep the land, because it's not just a regular lien, it's an apotiki. It's the whole land is designated with the assumption that, yes, you will be able to take the land. And that's the case that we're talking about. That's why you can take the entire land. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.